after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's cause unto the king, saying, "There is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. To whom I answered, 'It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die, before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face, and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him.' Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat, and commanded the man to be brought forth, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved under the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, 'I would also hear the man myself.' 'Tomorrow,' said he, 'thou shalt hear him.' And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing, with the chief captains and principal men of the city, at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. And Festus said, 'King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, you see this man about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. When I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my lord. Wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner, and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him." Paul was imprisoned at Caesarea for 2 years, and chapter 25 opens with his second trial. The first trial was before Felix, and the second is before the new governor, Festus. So the Jews renewed their charges against Paul, but they still had no proof to substantiate their claims. They were unable to prove the accusations that they had made. And they seem really in this second trial to be more focused on getting Paul back to Jerusalem, because as Luke notes, they had a plot to kill him once again. So Festus doesn't know how to proceed, and he gave Paul the opportunity to go to Jerusalem for trial. Paul, of course, refused this request and appealed to Caesar. And Festus, after taking counsel, granted that appeal. So Paul's appeal to Caesar was the easiest option for Festus to get out of the situation without upsetting Rome or without upsetting the Jews in Judea. But though this was the easiest option, it did not solve all of Festus' problems. He had to send Paul to Rome to appear before Nero, and he had to include a report along with the case records, and that report had to offer reasonable justification for Festus to grant the appeal. For instance, when the Jews dragged Paul to the judgment seat in Corinth, you'll recall there in Acts chapter 18 how that Gallio there, once he became aware that this case involved not any sort of what Rome would consider political or criminal activity, but rather was a dispute about the law and the customs of the Jews, he immediately dismissed the case and said that it would not hear it. It wasn't for his jurisdiction. It wasn't something to be tried in a Roman court. Now, Lysias, in the case of Paul, had not done that, even though he came to the same conclusion. Felix had not done that, and we don't really know for sure the conclusion that Felix came to. And Festus had also not done that, though he is in this passage before us saying that he had come to the same conclusion. So obviously, there would have to be a good legal explanation for why that Festus had not released Paul and had granted him the appeal to Caesar. So this chapter ends with Agrippa visiting Festus in Caesarea and providing Festus the opportunity to get counsel on how to proceed. We want to look at this passage in two different parts. Verses 13 to 22 speak of Agrippa visiting Festus in Caesarea. And verses 23 to 27 is where Festus begins the hearing of Paul before Agrippa. So let's begin looking here with verse 13. "And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus." Now, the Agrippa that is mentioned in this passage is Herod Agrippa II. Herod Agrippa II. He was the son of Herod Agrippa I. That was the Herod who killed James and was himself struck down in Acts chapter number 12. He had a great uncle who was Herod Antipas. And Herod Antipas was the Herod that is mentioned in the Gospels during Jesus' ministry. And he's the one who also had John the Baptist beheaded. His great-grandfather was Herod the Great. Herod the Great was the ruler at the time of Jesus' birth. In fact, he was considered the king of Judea, and in sort of more familiar terms, was actually at the time referred to as the king of the Jews. Herod the Great was the one that was responsible for many great building projects. He enlarged the temple and what have you. Sometimes it's even referred to as Herod's temple. That was Herod the Great. So that's the great-grandfather of Herod Agrippa II that we're reading about in this passage. Agrippa II was the last of the Herodian dynasty. He was the last ruler of that dynasty. He was granted the title of king by the emperor Claudius in Rome. He ruled over areas. He did not rule over all of the territory that his great-grandfather had ruled over, but he ruled over areas mainly in the northern part of Palestine. And he also had been given authority over the temple in Jerusalem, as well as having the responsibility of appointing the high priests. He was a Jew, though evidently he was from a non-practicing family, and he grew up in Rome. But he was well acquainted with Judaism, and he was a supporter of Judaism, often using his position in ways to support and to help the Jews. So he came to Caesarea with his sister Bernice to salute Festus, the new governor. Now, Agrippa and Bernice also had a sister named Drusilla, who was the wife of Felix, who was the governor in Caesarea before Festus. Now, some suppose that he came to Caesarea because he wanted to intervene in Paul's case. Now, Luke does not give any reason or motivation for his visit beyond that of political courtesy and expediency. It says that he came to salute Festus. Well, we know that Festus had just taken over this governorship, and it was an important governorship in the Roman Empire over the province of Judea. So Festus had just taken over this governorship, and Agrippa came to salute him. And it certainly is reasonable that that was the main purpose of his visit. However, his visit did provide a good opportunity for Festus and his problem with Paul. So in many ways, Agrippa is the perfect figure for Festus to seek counsel from. Agrippa has a foot in both worlds. He has a foot in the world of the Jews, as well as having a foot in high places in the Roman Empire. High places among Judaism, high places within the Roman Empire. So he was the perfect advisor for Festus to seek. Verse 14. "And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's case unto the king, saying, 'There's a certain man left in bonds by Felix.'" So Festus recognized and seized this opportunity. And he begins addressing Agrippa here. Now, this is not in any sort of formal proceeding. This is in a private meeting when he is making a disclosure to Agrippa concerning Paul and his case to this point. So he begins here by starting to state the facts of the case. Now, as we read through his statement of the facts of the case, we realize that these facts are going to be given from his perspective. And therefore, they're also going to be given to his best favor. They're going to put him in the best possible light concerning the actions and decisions that he's made. Much like we saw in the letter of Lysias to Felix. He refers here first to the fact that Felix had left Paul in prison. In other words, Felix had not resolved this case. So he's telling Agrippa, in essence, that he has inherited a difficult case. Now, verse 15. About whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. So Festus relays the charges that the Jewish leaders made against Paul while Festus was in Jerusalem. Now, Luke does not, in the passage here, recount and restate those charges, but they must have been either known already by Agrippa, or they were stated, and Luke is just giving us a summary here of what happened, because they had already been stated in the account. So Festus is adding here, you notice at the end of verse 15, desiring to have a judgment against him. What he's saying is that the Jewish leaders that had accused Paul had sought a guilty verdict against Paul from Festus. Now, in the case of the charges that were made against him, the charge of defiling or attempting to defile the temple, as well as the charge of sedition, that he had gone about and had incited riots among the Jews throughout the Roman Empire, a guilty verdict in either of those charges would mean a death sentence. So they had sought death sentence from Festus. Now, obviously Festus would not need to convince Agrippa about the seriousness of these charges. These are not petty and small claims. These are very serious charges. Again, that if found guilty would mean the death penalty, Roman citizen or not. Verse 16. To whom I answered, it is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before that he which is accused have the accusers face to face and have license to answer for himself concerning the crime laid against him. So Festus continues here as he's now stating his refusal to the Jews concerning the verdict and the delivering of Paul there to be tried. Now you notice that as Festus is giving this account, he's putting himself in the light as being the upholder of Roman law. Now, when Paul spoke in his own defense, Paul was the one who actually made reference to the Roman law as applied to his case. And we don't have Festus stating that. So he speaks here of what maybe was a motivation, though it doesn't seem like it was a primary one, though he does state it that way to Agrippa. In verse 17, therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth. So Festus is here emphasizing the fact that he acted quickly. Now, Luke had earlier reported that Festus did act very quickly without supplying any motivation on his part. Verse 18 says, against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such things as I supposed. So as Festus now begins to detail the actual trial to Agrippa, he talks about how that the Jewish leaders, they did stand up against Paul, they did make accusation against Paul, however, they didn't charge Paul with any crimes that warranted the judgment of a Roman governor. Now, it could be that Festus means that they didn't charge Paul at all in these ways, or he could be referring to the fact that though they had made some accusations, they had been unfounded because they had failed to prove any sort of accusations that would make him worthy of being judged by a Roman governor. Either way, he is saying that the case against Paul is not what he thought that it would be, given his accusers given opportunity to make charge against him. Verse 19, but had certain questions against him of their own superstition, and of one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. So Festus concludes their charges by saying that they amounted to a religious dispute. Now the word for superstition, we have the word superstition there in verse 19, and the word for superstition refers to religious practices. It's not superstition as we would think of it today, but of religious tradition. Essentially, he's referring to the laws and customs of the Jewish people at the time. So the second point that he makes of contention is that it was about their laws and customs. And secondly, it was about this one Jesus, which was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive. So the second point of contention between the accusers and the accused was a disagreement over whether some person named Jesus was alive or dead. Now Festus talks here as if he had not heard about Jesus before, as if he was unfamiliar with the crucifixion and the things that took place. And that is certainly possible. Festus had, as far as we know and can tell, Festus otherwise had no ties to the community of the Jews or to this particular region. And as far as that goes, executions were rather commonplace. They happened with pretty good frequency, although the circumstances around the execution of Jesus were certainly unique. Nevertheless, it's possible that he either had not heard of it or did not know much about it. In fact, when you consider the age of Agrippa, I have read concerning historical records that when Festus is talking to Agrippa, Agrippa would have been in his late 20s, meaning that this would have happened before he was born as far as the crucifixion of Jesus. Agrippa certainly knows about it. But what I'm saying is I don't know for certain what the age of Festus would be, but it could be that those were events that happened before he was born, or nevertheless when he was very young. Either way, he talks like he doesn't know. He doesn't know about it, and he doesn't know what all that's about, what all that involves. Verse number 20, "And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters." So Festus now confesses to Agrippa that he was at a loss at how to proceed in this case. Now Luke had previously noted in the earlier part of the chapter that Festus wanted to show favor to the Jews or grant a favor to the Jews by offering Paul the trial in Jerusalem. Now you'll notice that when Festus comes to this point of the proceedings with Agrippa, that he merely states he didn't know how to proceed and therefore offered the possibility of trial in Jerusalem. This is, or should be, odd, because that should have meant that Paul should have been set free. In other words, Festus is saying that they didn't make any charges against Paul that would merit being tried in a Roman court. And they had these disputes about these matters of their religion and this one named Jesus who the Jews said was dead and Paul said was alive. So really, just like it was in the case with Gallio in Corinth, Paul should have been set free and the case dismissed. And the Jews told that they had no judgment in that matter. That's what should have happened. So this does seem to be odd. Verse 21. "But when Paul had appealed to be reserved unto the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar." Now, no doubt by the time you get to verse 20, as Agrippa is hearing the retelling of these events, there's no question that the thought of his mind would be, well, you know, Paul should have been set free and the case dismissed. That seems open and shut. Then Festus reveals that Paul has appealed to the emperor. He has refused a trial in Jerusalem and he has appealed to the emperor in Rome. And of course, that also explains why Paul continued in custody at the time that Agrippa had arrived. Verse 22. "Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, that is Festus, thou shalt hear him." So Agrippa was interested in the case. And I understand that the wording that's used here, the statement that Agrippa made, that it could indicate that he was familiar with Paul and perhaps had wanted, or before now had wanted, to hear the man. That he certainly was interested in the case and was glad to have the opportunity to hear Paul. And of course, the verse ends with Festus responding that tomorrow he will have that opportunity. So then we come to verse 23. This is the next part of this passage that ends this chapter. And this is where Festus actually begins the hearing. Now, the actual hearing of Paul, it starts here. And then in chapter 26, Paul gives his lengthy defense before Agrippa. And then there is some back and forth. So the rest of the hearing takes place in the next chapter. But this is the beginning of it, here in verse number 23. And on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains and principal men of the city at Festus' commandment, Paul was brought forth. So the next day, Paul's hearing was before Agrippa. Because of his appeal that had been granted, Agrippa is in no position here to render any sort of a verdict concerning Paul. In other words, Agrippa is not trying the case. He cannot offer any sort of verdict. He can offer his opinion as to whether he thinks Paul is guilty or innocent, but he can't offer any sort of a legal decision because an appeal has been requested and it has been granted to Caesar. So that moves it out of their jurisdiction. So that's not what this hearing is about. This hearing is about Festus receiving counsel on the particulars of transferring this case to Rome. That's what this hearing is for. And Agrippa is here not to make any sort of a binding pronouncement on anything Festus has to do, but he's here more or less to give advice, to give legal advice of how to proceed in transferring this case to Rome. So the hearing, Luke notes, was set with great pomp, and that word means a display or a show, ceremony, pageantry, that sort of thing. So notice who is present at this hearing. You have obviously Festus. Festus is the governor of the province of Judea. You have King Agrippa and Queen Bernice. You have the five Roman cohort commanders that were there at Caesarea. And then you also have what are labeled as the prominent men of the city. Now, as I understand it, that most likely included any sort of high-ranking, whether political or even socially high-ranking members of the Greeks of the society of Caesarea and of the Jews of the city there of Caesarea. And Luke notes that they entered with great show. So the room is set now with the highest-ranking persons available. And then Paul, as Luke says, was brought forth. He was brought in. All these others enter with their great pomp and circumstance, and Paul is brought in as a prisoner. All eyes trained on him, looking him up and down, finding his physical appearance unappealing and unimpressive. And that's exactly what the false apostles said of him in Corinth, and what Paul confessed himself to in his letter that we know as 2 Corinthians. Paul stands in the midst of a room full of people who are more powerful and more important in the world than he is by far. Paul, though being a freeborn Roman citizen, which does give him some amount of rank, is still yet a lowly prisoner of no importance to those who are gathered. Verse 24. And Festus said, King Agrippa, and all men which are here present with us, you see this man about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. Festus begins his address now to the gathering. And now this is, as is seen by the nature of the proceeding and the legal terms and things that are used, this is a formal hearing. Again, it's not a trial. No one there has authority to try Paul now. But it is a legal, formal hearing. And so Festus begins in a very formal manner. He addresses the gathering, but his focus is obviously on Agrippa. But all present are essentially sought for counsel, as you can tell by the end of this chapter. So he points to Paul, and he explains his presence there as because the multitude of the Jews thought that he ought not live any longer. Now, Festus seems to be compressing the whole case involving Paul at this point. In fact, as he speaks of this shouting or crying that he ought not to live any longer. Now, that's answerable to the original riot that happened at the temple in Jerusalem when Lysias intervened. We've not read of anything like that since that time, other than perhaps in the Council of the Sanhedrin. We have another similar incident, but nothing involving Festus. So Festus seems to be just sort of compressing this whole case involving Paul and sort of putting it all upon himself, as if to say, this is the great pressure that I am under. And by saying that he ought not to live any longer, he's referring, of course, again, to this guilty verdict that is sought by the Jews, that they determine him to be a guilty criminal that should be put to death. Verse 25. But when I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself hath appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him. Festus relates his judgment concerning Paul's trial. He did not find him guilty of crime justifying the death penalty. Another way to put that is, he found Paul to be innocent of the charges that had been brought against him, or at the very least, that the charges brought against him had failed to be substantiated. Festus adds the conclusion of the trial that Paul appeared to Caesar, Augustus being one of the terms applied to the emperor. He doesn't explain here why Paul appealed or give any reason for it. He just merely adds the fact that he granted this appeal. Verse 26. Of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord, wherefore I have brought him forth before you, and especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. Festus gets to the end of his address by explaining the reason for the hearing that he has convened in the presence of those that he has called. Festus is here saying that he did not understand the nature of the charges against Paul by the Jews. In other words, he believed him innocent of any criminal wrongdoing against Rome. But he is confessing that he has a lack of knowledge concerning Jewish law and customs, and he does not know what to write in his report to Nero. And so he is appealing here to all of those gathered before you, he's saying, as he's addressing the whole crowd, and then especially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination I might have somewhat to write. So he's looking for advice in this matter in order to make his report to the emperor in the case of transferring Paul to Rome. Verse 27. For it seemeth to me unreasonable to send a prisoner and not withal signify the crimes laid against him. Festus states that it's unreasonable to send a prisoner to Rome to Caesar without specifying the charges against him. It's not only unreasonable, it's also illegal, according to Roman law, as far as I understand it. In fact, in the case, you can find the Roman jurisprudence, the court proceedings of handling such cases. He would be required to file a report to be sent along with the appellant. And that's where the party of the first parts and the party of the second parts and all those kind of things come in. He would have to file this report to be given to Nero, essentially because it was the passing from a lower court to a higher court of a prisoner by appeal, and it was required in those cases. So various facts of the case would have to be stated, and one of the things that would have to be included in this report was the crimes that he was charged with. And of course, Festus is here just admitting he does not know what to write in this case. He doesn't know how to fill out this report. And so he is bringing Paul before them for a hearing so that all of them can advise, but especially Agrippa, concerning what to write and how to proceed. So as we think about this section, we've been noting as we've been going through the last several incidents in this account, how that Paul is mostly a passive participant in these unfolding events. Most of these things are just happening to him. Here we open in this passage with a scene where Festus and Agrippa are having a private meeting discussing Paul. Paul's not even present, and they're talking about him and his fate. We've seen this sort of thing happening. And here it is emphasized how that all the nobles came with all their pomp and circumstance, while Paul was merely brought in as a prisoner. So it should help us to understand Paul's situation. Festus, in his first disclosure to Agrippa, mentioned the debate over whether Jesus was alive or not. And it seems that he may not have understood this argument since he was not familiar with the case of Jesus. But Agrippa would be familiar with the account of Jesus. In fact, Jesus had stood trial before his great uncle, Herod Antipas, before he was returned to Pilate and finally executed. So there's no question that Agrippa was familiar with the case of Jesus and the debate over the resurrection and all of those things that followed, including the development of the way, the followers of Jesus Christ, who claimed to have been included many eyewitnesses to his resurrection. So no doubt Agrippa was very familiar. And you notice in these events that even though Paul is a passive participant, he has been so consistent to highlight and to focus upon the resurrection of Jesus Christ and what that means, that here we have a case where here Paul has not even yet spoken, and still yet the resurrection of Jesus Christ is given a central place in what is going on. So Luke is keeping this issue of the resurrection of Jesus in focus. We certainly take away that the resurrection of Jesus lands his followers in all sorts of trouble in the world and has down through history since it took place. Paul was a witness of the resurrection. And we are here seeing, as these events unfold, we're here seeing what that means. What does it mean for Paul to be a witness of the resurrection of Jesus Christ? It means that he must keep giving his testimony to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's exactly what we see Paul doing. Now, we are not witnesses today in the way that Paul was. Paul was an eyewitness. He saw Jesus alive after he had been crucified on the cross. He's an eyewitness of Jesus Christ's resurrection. We have not physically seen Jesus alive. We are not witnesses in the same way that Paul was, but we are witnesses to his resurrection through the testimony of his apostles. And that's given to us in this written word. But we are also witnesses to his resurrection through the knowledge, as Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, through the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ that God has revealed in the hearts of all of those who believe in Jesus Christ. We are witnesses of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Not in the same way that Paul was, but we are witnesses to the same resurrection that Paul was. That means that we also must, like Paul, give priority to the testifying of the resurrection of Jesus Christ and how that resurrection means the forgiveness of sins and the gift of eternal life for all who repent and believe in Jesus Christ. We must, like Paul, as witnesses, continue to testify to the resurrection of Jesus Christ and what it means.